It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. We're going to take a look back at what our state elected leaders accomplished in 2019 and goals for this year with Governor Tom Wolf. Welcome back to the confluence, Governor.
Thank you, Kevin. It's good to be with you.
You wrote an op-ed piece that appeared in the Morning Call last week. You referenced some bipartisan accomplishments. Give me one example of a bipartisan effort that was maybe not expected, that was not an obvious, sure, everyone can hop on board this issue.
Well, I think that there were a number of them. The election bill was something that was bipartisan. Not everybody jumped on it right away, but it was the most dramatic reform of our election code, I think, in 80 years, maybe in the history of Pennsylvania.
But what specifically about the reforming of election, about voting, was key for you?
Well, we essentially have voting by mail now. With no excuse, absentee ballots. You go to the registrar of elections, say, I want an absentee ballot. They can no longer say why. They just have to give it to you. So it's essentially vote by mail, which means that those absentee ballots are printed up 50 days before the election. Even if there's a dispute, they can't be held up more than 3 weeks before an election. So what used to be one day to vote in Pennsylvania is now 50 days to vote. It's the longest in the nation. It used to be that absentee ballots had to be in the Friday before the Tuesday, voting Tuesday. Now the absentee ballots don't have to be in until 8 o'clock on voting day.
On January 1st, the minimum wage rose in 20 states. Four more will follow later this year. The state Senate has approved a bill to increase Pennsylvania's minimum wage to $9.50 an hour. Now it's before the state House. What are the chances the Republican-controlled House okays that boost?
I'm not sure. You have to ask the leaders in the House. But the Senate did pass that, and there was another piece of public policy that I promoted, and that was to improve Pennsylvania's standing with the overtime regulations for salaried workers. Pennsylvania was, you weren't really qualified to stand for overtime unless you were making less than $26,000. The federal government just raised that to $35,000. I'm proposing to raise that to $45,000 in Pennsylvania, and that goes before one of our commissions in the end of this month.
Were you likely to sort of abandon that increase if the legislature would boost the minimum wage?
I wasn't clear on doing that. I wanted to increase the overtime, and getting it to $35,000, which the federal government did, was certainly an improvement over where we were in Pennsylvania. But I was determined to get that, and I was willing to be patient if the House was willing to do what the Senate did. But since they weren't last year, I went ahead with what I was doing on the $45,000.
What's it going to take to boost the minimum wage in Pennsylvania?
I don't know. I've called for it every year in every budget that I've given. I'll continue to do it. I think it's not only morally unconscionable, but it's practically self-defeating. We actually spend hundreds of millions of dollars on our social safety net to companies whose employees make less than they should, so that they qualify for these social safety net programs. So if we actually had a minimum wage that was around where I want it, we would be saving hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money.
Governor Tom Wolf is our guest on the Confluence. Governor, a lot of talk, some action at the state level about criminal justice reform. In December, you signed part two of what's known as the Justice Reinvestment Initiative. How are those new laws going to help lower the cost of incarceration, reduce recidivism, and still maintain public safety specifically?
Well, the hope is that this starts the process of actually putting fewer people in prison who really shouldn't be there, who haven't done things that make our society measurably less safe. The estimate is that it would save about $40-45 million a year, but without jeopardizing our safety. There are people who are put in prison because probation rules keep, you know, they can make a modest infraction of a probation rule and end up in prison for doing something like a wheelie on a street on a motorbike. And I think those are the kinds of things that this kind of reform is aimed at addressing. And it really has brought people from, you know, across the aisle, and Republicans and Democrats together, to look at these things. There is still disagreement. There's still areas that I think we need to move. But where we are now, it was the Justice Reinvestment Initiative Part 2, actually. We're in a better place than we were before I signed that.
Such as specifically what you think we still need to do?
Well, I'm against mandatory minimum sentences. The bill that I signed did have one mandatory minimum sentence. I'm against any. I don't think judges should be kept from making whatever decision they think they ought to make in that case. I think there was a bill that is still being considered in the House that hasn't yet passed that, you know, I think I think it's Senate Bill 502, the crime victims bill, that I think is probably going to pass the House, and I'll sign that.
You mentioned probation. When the House returns, it could vote on a bill to reform the probation system. Do you expect House concurrence on probation reform?
I'm hoping. I shouldn't say expect. I'm hopeful that they will support that. Yeah.
It seems that a lot of the criminal justice reform proposals that have been passed and floated are at the back end, after someone is convicted, serves time, gets into trouble. But what about before someone is convicted? Pennsylvania is the only state that does not provide funds for public defender offices. Will you propose funding for public defenders?
I already have, and I will continue to, for public defenders. Yeah, I think that's wrong. I also believe that we ought to do bail reform. We've essentially created a debtor's prison system in Pennsylvania where we throw people in jail who haven't committed a crime, but simply because they can't post a $50 bail.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Our guest is Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf. You have repeatedly advocated for various gun legislation with limited success. 17 states have adopted red flag laws under which a person's family members think they might be a danger to themselves or others, and then they can petition a court to temporarily seize the firearms. There is such a bill in our legislature. What are the chances for passage?
That's an interesting thing. I would have given it a great chance for passage, and I think if it were actually allowed to come up for a vote, it would pass overwhelmingly. But you can block things with parliamentary procedure, and I don't control that process. So I'm not sure if it will be brought up for a vote. If it does, I think it'll pass. I think there are some reasonable pieces of gun legislation that would pass overwhelmingly in both the House and the Senate. And I will continue to try to push for those things. Red flag is one of those.
After Lieutenant Governor Fetterman concluded his statewide listening tour, you said that you supported legalizing recreational marijuana. Will you push for legalization in 2020?
Yes. Now, if you'll recall, when we did our joint press conference, we actually had three things that we were promoting. One is the decriminalization of possessions of small amounts of marijuana. Second was expungement of records of people who had been convicted for possession of small amounts according to the new lower limits. And then the third thing was the actual legalization of recreational marijuana. Of those three things, I would imagine the first two, the legislature should be able to do that fairly quickly. The legalization of recreational marijuana will probably take a little bit longer, but I support that and will continue to voice my support.
In about a month, you will be unveiling your budget for fiscal 2021. What will be your key priorities? Any major shift from your previous five budget priorities?
It'll be a continuation. There's some, again, unfinished business. Again, the minimum wage. I have called for an increase in the minimum wage every budget. I will continue to do that. And education will continue to be a priority. I've worked to bend the healthcare cost curve. I'll continue to do that and things like that.
Governor, we started our conversation talking about what you listed as some bipartisan efforts and successes. It is an election year. Do you really expect any bipartisan cooperation in 2020?
Yeah, we have been through election years before where I've gotten good bipartisan support, including 2018 where I ran. I got some good things done, more increases for education. I've doubled the amount of money going into early childhood education. We still have work to do in both those areas. And I will continue to work on those things. And I think the people in the General Assembly are interested in the issues that affect their constituents, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, and regardless of whether it's an election year or not. There are a lot of areas where we're all on the same page trying to make Pennsylvania a better place. And I think that's what I hope to continue regardless of the outcome of the 2020 election.
Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Kevin. It's always good to be with you.
I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
The Confluence airs weekday mornings from 9 to 10, but the news never stops. Find stories, conversations, and full episodes on our website at wesa.fm/confluence, on Twitter at WESAConfluence, and wherever you get your podcasts. The Confluence continues next on 90.5 WESA.
I'm Katie Blackley with the Pittsburgh Almanac. This week in history, federal officers arrest and begin deporting tens of thousands of Southern and Eastern European immigrants in an event that would come to be known as the Palmer Raids. The 1920 raids occurred in the larger context of the Red Scare, the fear of radical communism entering the United States after the Russian Revolution and World War I. In Pittsburgh, people affiliated with Eastern Europe or with what the government considered radical ideology were surveilled. After the Justice Department launched the raid, it followed up on operations over the next few days. Smaller raids extended over the next 6 weeks. That's today's Pittsburgh Almanac.
WESA celebrates 90 neighborhoods, 90 good stories, a weekly series about people who make the place they live a better place to live.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Today we hear from a Sheridan resident trying to redefine her community through neighborhood support initiatives. Terry Minor Spencer leads West End Power, which stands for Providing Opportunities with Effective Resources. Minor Spencer spoke with 90.5 WESA's Elaine Effort about how the program started.
We started an adult GED program because our men and women, you know, were lacking employment because of not graduating from high school. So me and two other members went and got certified through the Pittsburgh Literacy Council. Now we teach the GED program. We partner with the West Side Salvation Army over here. We do kettlebells. We help with a lot of their programs that they have. If something is in need of, we do a lot of gather up the resources for the community, just trying to make sure that the community is at the table.
What motivated you to do these things?
You know what, just having the conversations with our community members, you know, them not knowing what was going on, lack of support throughout the whole community, because a lot of people call the West End, some like to say we are the forgotten community. That's what really started the lack of new knowledge or the lack of what's really going on. And we just decided to, you know, let's get together and try to find out what's going on and bring it to the community so everyone knows.
Why was it said that the West End is forgotten? Why were people saying that?
Well, people like to say that. They still kind of say that because it seems as though we were speaking different languages. We weren't, this table will be saying one thing, and the rest of Pittsburgh is speaking one language, and then West End would seem to be the last at the table. So it kind of got like that, and then it kind of got like we became stagnated. You know, we became stagnated, and so now we're moving forward, you know, and try to build unity as one and speak one language so we can all be on the same page and at the same table.
What more would you like to do? Do you see things where they should be, or is there more you'd like to do?
I love to see thriving people making it. I'm a strong believer that if you know something, share it with someone else. Don't hold it. Because that's where we stay stagnated. You know, if you got something to share and if it can help the next person, share it. That's the only way that we can grow. And one of my friends had said how can we get our seniors to sit back out on the porch? You know, how can we get our seniors to not be afraid to tell a young man, pull your pants up? You know, or tell a young lady, hey, that's not how you're supposed to be talking. How can we get our seniors back in our community feeling safe and a part of our community? So, right, that's something we're working on as well. Everyone's included. Everyone has a seat. Everyone is welcome. And everyone feels like this is part of what they can go to and say, hey, how can we help?
Terry Minor Spencer of Power, providing opportunities with effective resources. Thank you for taking time to do this interview.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Last April, legislation known as Act 95 took effect in Pennsylvania. It eliminated driver's license suspensions for non-driving related offenses. But it was not retroactive, so an estimated tens of thousands of Pennsylvanians still cannot legally drive. We're going to talk about how that impacts individuals, their families, and efforts to remedy the problem with Joyce Douglas, a retired state parole agent, attorney Sean Stevenson, who represents individuals looking to reinstate their licenses, Chelsea Sermons, he's a Pittsburgher, who unless changes are made, won't get his license back for another 6 years. And Billy Joe Varner of Washington County, who had his license restored several weeks ago. Welcome to The Confluence.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Sean, I'm going to start with you. How did the original law suspending driver's license come about? Was it part of the war on drugs?
Absolutely, it was part of the war on drugs. And the state legislator thought that, and this is a federal law as well, that they thought if they can, as a consequence of a criminal conviction, suspend someone's driver's license, that that would prove to be an effective deterrent to someone selling drugs, possessing drugs, or otherwise. And so you have states that have their own individual penalties, but those penalties do transfer to your home driver licensing state.
And Joyce, this was sort of pressure on states to do this, and they were holding out sort of the dollars carrot, if you would. You'll get your federal transportation dollars?
Correct.
So did all states do this? Pennsylvania obviously did.
I believe all states have done it prior to this legislation. All but, I think it was 13 states, 12 or 13, had discontinued this practice. Pennsylvania was one of the ones who had not.
Mm-hmm. Was it intended to be so punitive, or were there unintended consequences, Sean?
Well, I think the effect was to deter the drug crimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it has not worked out as such. Okay, it has provided no deterrent whatsoever. And so I don't know that they were so much focused on the punitive intent, but when you look at the statute, the way it's written, repeat offenses and how you get a 6-month suspension initially for a conviction, and then your next conviction is 1 year for every count, and then it's 2 years. It's almost like, and PennDOT was aware of this when the law went into effect.
Mm-hmm.
People were charged with a crime, and usually if you're possessing drugs, you could be charged with 2 or 3 counts. That's 2 or 3 separate suspensions, depending on how it's worked out in the criminal case. So PennDOT was aware of it, but our state representatives, our elected officials, I don't think they were aware of much when they signed this law into effect.
Trust?
Well, when I first started in 1990 as a parole agent, that law was not in effect yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it went into effect in 1992, the war on drugs. And prior to people having their license suspended, I had the opportunity to see how they were able to reenter and what they were able to do when they came home. And I don't believe that they intended these consequences. I think because people who make these laws don't understand the circumstances or aren't involved in it, that they thought this would be a deterrent. But truly, most of the people who got their license suspended didn't even understand that was an additional punishment that was going to happen to them. They didn't even understand that there was anything to do. And I actually had people that came home that didn't even know that they had a license suspension.
Chelsea and Billy Joe, did you know that your licenses were going to be suspended, Chelsea?
No. Well, I knew after the first time, but I didn't know to what extent with multiple arrests and convictions. It's just crazy to me that you suffer from a disease of substance use disorder and you sign these papers not knowing the full consequences. And then when you get yourself together, then it's like you're stuck. I won't get my license back if things don't go right till 2026. You know, and that's due to me caught up in my act of addiction. I'm a person of long-term recovery, so now the consequences continue to go on. And my life is so much better now. You know what I mean?
Billy Joe.
Well, when you're consumed by greed or you're in the midst of active addiction, you're not paying mind to any of the consequences. It's not like that fear of consequences is going to keep you from committing a crime. It's not like that fear of, you know, of not getting your license back or even like having your license. Like if I don't have my license and I'm committing a crime, I'm not thinking about, well, I don't have my driver's license, so this is going to stop me from committing a crime or this is going to stop me from using drugs. That's just not going to have any, you know, any effect on it. I mean, just the idea that that fear would be enough to keep someone from committing a crime or keep someone from continuing drug use is just absurd.
So when the legislation was passed in Harrisburg, Act 95, eliminating the automatic suspensions, do we know why a retroactive clause was not included, Joyce?
Well, when I started working with Rick Saccone,
He was then state representative.
Yes, yes, he was my local state representative. So I went to him after I retired and discussed this situation and told him that I saw it as such a deterrent to people being able to reenter and being successful. And I believe initially he thought that this would be a hard sell, that we would have a lot of trouble getting this passed. And so he did not want to write retroactivity in the bill. He wanted to address it after the bill passed. Mm-hmm. And that was the intent. But as things turned out, he was not there.
Even more importantly than that, I would venture to guess that similar to acts in 1995 and 2018, which were the amendments to the habitual offender statute, which declassified many different people that were previously classified as habitual offenders, that statute was not retroactive, but it was applied retroactively by PennDOT to millions of drivers. Similarly, in 2018, the amendments to Section 1541 that applied to credit, where someone had to turn their driver's license in or an affidavit, PennDOT finally let go of those arcane rules and they gave everybody credit the effective date of their suspension. Those, once again, didn't say anything about it being retroactive, but they applied it retroactively. In this case, I imagine PennDOT and other people said, we're not going to put it in there. We'll see what happens. And yet this one was the most debated about that didn't work. It was not providing the deterrent effects. The punitive effects were outrageous and even worse than the criminal statute themselves that they changed the law. And so everybody assumed it was going to be retroactive and look that it wasn't. So,
Chelsea, you mentioned the drug offenses. How long have you been out and how long have you been sober?
Coming up on 5 years. Mm-hmm. And multiple job offers. I have a certificate in drug and alcohol, certified recovery specialist, career development facilitator, and multiple job offers in the recovery field. But the issue is all recovery field opportunities want you to have a license.
Mm-hmm. And you don't.
And I don't. Mm-hmm. So that's the major issue right now, and it's hindering me in progressing.
When you heard about this law originally, what were you thinking? Did you think, oh, I'm going to get my license back, but then you discovered, oh, it's not retroactive? What?
Definitely thought it would be in my favor to get my life back, you know, on track, and you know, it would fall in my favor to continue to progress in life because, you know, the system says we want you to be a progressive member of society. But then there are all these roadblocks that are hindering me from. especially the license. That's major, you know what I mean? Because getting to and from work, groceries and all of those things, spending time with my family, and getting to and from a place of employment, plus school, plus recovery, you know, doing those types of things become a lot easier with a vehicle compared to catching a bus and things of those nature, of that nature.
Billy Joe, your license was suspended for how long?
I mean, it had just been so long where I had just abandoned all hope that I was ever going to drive again. But, I mean, my suspension started in 2012, so, you know.
And you received your license back when?
Actually, a few weeks ago, you know. So I'm like still that kid who's got that smile on his face from Christmas, you know.
Well, so it was restored not under Act 95, but through other circumstances.
Yes.
So what has it meant to you to get that sense freedom back?
Well, to be honest, it's like surreal because, I mean, the moment I got my license back, well, she helped me out, you
Joyce.
Know, which was, yeah, Joyce helped me out, which was, I was very grateful for. But you know, and, you know, within those next few days, I mean, I actually went out to a treatment facility in Mid-State and, you know, gave the Sunday sermon there. So that was a great opportunity for me. And then I got to spend some time with my daughter. You know, there's these things in my life that was keeping me. It wasn't from, like, just a job and being a productive member of society. Like, my family was really suffering.
We'll continue our conversation about tens of thousands of Pennsylvanians who are hoping to have their driver's licenses reinstated. That's when the Confluence continues on 90.5 WESA. It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. If you're just joining us, we're talking about efforts to make a new law, Act 95, retroactive. If they're successful, it would reinstate driver's licenses for people convicted of non-driving related offenses. Our guests are two individuals who have had their licenses suspended, Chelsea Sermons and Billy Joe Varner, plus attorney Sean Stevenson and retired state parole agent Joyce Douglas. Joyce, Sean, what about this issue made you want to get involved?
Well, what made me want to get involved with it is watching the detrimental effects that these suspensions had over the course of 20-some years. I would have people come home from incarceration who had done the work, who had recovered from their addictions, who really wanted to do well and really were excited about their future, only to find out that their licenses were suspended. And I would give them a laundry list of things that I wanted them to do, including going to treatment, coming in for appointments, and they were just unable to do it because of the license. And I saw how it had effects on the family. There was a lot of collateral damage because they would come home and then family members would have to rearrange their schedules to be able to get them where they needed to be. They couldn't get apartments in a lot of cases because a landlord would want to see a driver's license to make sure that they would be able to pay their rent. They couldn't take their kids to school. They couldn't pick up a prescription. It was just so detrimental to their reentry, their successful reentry, and I just thought that was something I wanted to work on.
Mm-hmm. Sean, why did you want to get involved?
I'd like to be as magnanimous as Joyce, but the fact is I get paid to do this. I had worked for PennDOT in the 90s. I went out in private practice in 1996, and I've been doing this ever since. It was not my intention to do driver licensing. That was going to be sort of a side gig to get me going. And what I found out was there is a great need for this, not just as related to the Drug Act, but the other acts I talked about. And I found myself doing this full time. And then different other aspects of the driver licensing law. I used to participate in some of the legislative things that would happen in Harrisburg. And as I was telling Joyce, you know, I'm a real big cynic now of how this goes down, seeing how the process works. And this is a particular act in and of itself where the intent was to get people back to work, get people on their feet, and yet they shut the door on it. And it applies to new cases only. That doesn't help anybody. That was not the intent of this act. That was not the intent of the debates and everything that happened. Because until driving is a right and not a privilege, no one's going to care. No one's going to do anything. And people like your guests that are here today are stuck, can't get a job. Can't visit with their kids. You don't have public transportation when you have child custody issues and you want to reunite with the family. It is absolutely outrageous.
Chelsea, you mentioned the job opportunities, but lack of being able to drive to those jobs has impacted you.
Yes.
Do you feel like you're being sort of double punished?
Triple punished. And also I have to mention that I wasn't in a vehicle during these arrests. You know what I mean? I was walking down the street between simple possession and paraphernalia, and I'm not justifying my behaviors. I was an act of addiction. But still, when you go in, do your time, and come out, I believe you paid your price. And now I'm paying another penalty without being able to get around to better and continue to better my life. So it's you know, asinine to me.
The penalty we're talking about, the driver's license suspension, number one, people like the guests here today, they're not told about it at their criminal hearing, okay? And let alone the act of addiction where you don't care about it, right? We all agree on that.
Yes.
The fact is, you're not even told about it. And if you have six counts, you get six separate suspensions. People that have that kind of information go to prison, they don't know until they're out.
And the subsequent suspensions are longer than the initial ones.
You have no idea. They're not advised by the court. They don't have to be advised by the court. And that's why everybody got together on Act 95. They realized how outrageous this was, because the punitive consequence was not what it was intended to be when it first came out on the war on drugs.
Billy Joe.
Yeah, I think that the main thing that we was talking about here is like the collateral damage and how the other families are affected, because, you know, we serve our time, you know, and we pay our debt to society, but there's also other people that are affected. And whenever you're in a court hearing, I mean, obviously there's a lot going on. You know, your license suspended, like, that's really not something that you're even thinking about, let alone like
it's
even,
not discussed.
Yeah, it's not discussed at all. You know, so again, like, we're dealing with probation here. These are the things that we have to deal with. We're dealing with, you know, with the fact that we're going to have to get out and report. And I mean, that can be very difficult as well without getting a license. I remember going to my probation officer and my mother had to take me, and I was 28. 27, 28 years
or
old.
Or let alone if you have to go to rehab, if you have to make a commitment to recovery. Yeah. You know, you can have people drive you here and there to meetings, but how do you stay in that process? I have people that have fell off the recovery train simply because they can't participate in drug court or DUI court because they can't get to court.
Mm-hmm. I saw many people come home who were very, very excited about their circumstances. And within several months, if they didn't have a driver's license, their lives became so arduous to them that they just, I could see people giving up hope, and then they would return to their old ways. Because if you can't get a job and you can't get any money to support yourself and you can't find a decent place to live, I mean, that's just life's core basics that people need, and they're unable to fulfill them.
Billy Joe.
So where I'm at in Washington, I'm very fortunate because there's a lot of stuff recovery-wise and work-wise, you know, within a walking distance. But you got to understand, it's like we're not just talking about jobs here. We're talking about good jobs. So, like, all the good jobs you need a license for. I mean, you can have no problem working as a waiter or something, but, you know, you're only going to get enough to support you in a three-quarter house. You know, once you pay your three-quarter house rent, and you have very little money left over to save and to try to build a productive life.
Governor Wolf has indicated he cannot wipe out the existing license suspensions with an executive order, that he would support legislation to make it retroactive. So what are the chances that legislation will be passed to tweak Act 95? Your thoughts, Sean?
Well, I told you, I'm a cynic and I have no hope in them doing it, even though that's their intent. Most of these people are worried about getting reelected, and somehow, until this gets out, it's just like the message of recovery and drug addiction. People are now realizing it's a disease, and we want to find a fix for it. Well, the drug courts and DUI courts are working, but they're not working for people that are told to get jobs on probation, told to report in every week. The success rate with someone having a driver's license is tenfold over people that don't have it, and most of those people are the people that can't afford it.
Joyce.
Well, I'm going to be the Pollyanna here because,
oh, okay.
Because I do think if we have to do this legislatively, we will be able to get it passed. Act 95 passed the House with only three dissenting votes, and there were zero dissenting votes in the Senate. It was unanimous. So I believe all stakeholders and legislators now understand that to have successful reentry, that this needs to be revisited.
Right. And there's been a letter sent to the governor, to the legislature, I believe, by all kinds of leaders, including district attorneys, et cetera, calling for this retroactivity, correct?
The letter that Equal Justice Under Law sent to the governor, yes, was signed by the Pittsburgh district attorney and Pittsburgh attorneys.
I'd love to hear why the governor can't sign that executive order, because this is a civil consequence. This is not a criminal penalty. So I'm wondering why he's telling people that. If he really thinks he can't do it, then what is the justification for not signing the executive order? And I am hopeful. I'm hopeful that everybody wants to get more information on this, that we're not 10 years away and then they're signing a retroactive bill. It needs to be done now.
Billy Joe, you have your license back, but where's your faith? You think it can happen for other people who have been through this like you have?
In my experience, when people receive the right information, they make the right decision. For the most part, you know, if people were educated on the consequences, if people were educated on, you know, what it is you're doing to people's lives, if enough people speak up, I mean, eventually things will have to change.
All right, Chelsea, this would affect you, whether it's done through executive order, which the governor says he can't do, or whether it's done through legislation, which the governor's indicated he would sign. Are you optimistic either way or even through a court case?
I'm optimistic. You have to have some hope somewhere, because I'm looking at it as all the baby boomers are retiring, so it'll help our economy. You know, like for the unions, you don't even have to know how to use a hammer. But the first thing they ask you, do you have a license? So I'm looking at it from that aspect and the need for employment and our economy, that they're going to do the right thing.
Chelsea Sermons is one of the many in Pennsylvania hoping to get his license back after serving time. Billy Joe Varner went through a similar struggle and can now legally drive again. Sean Stevenson has been representing folks like Chelsea and Billy Joe in court. And in addition to being a retired state parole agent, Joyce Douglas has been advocating on behalf of them all. Thanks to all of you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, hear from Mayor Bill Peduto on his priorities in 2020, plus efforts to bring back the American chestnut tree, and as the holiday comes to a close, how to recycle your Christmas tree. If you missed anything from today's program, or you'd like to catch up on past shows, please visit WESA.FM/confluence or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski. Production assistance from Caldwell Holden. The editor and producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.